Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, and especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate. Sutton Properties, our new company name, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Lou.
Teresa's one of our agents, and she makes me laugh, so I hope. Anyway, buying or selling homes, land or farms in western Piedmont, North Carolina, or southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is at 102 East Main Street next to BB&T Bank in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Please make a note of our changes. Our new company website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. Just a program note, Dr. Barbie Ask the Doctor show will now follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. So hang around. Dr. Barbie's always got something good to share. Hey, our guest today is Justin Osborne. Justin, welcome.
Hello, Lou. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. You're an accredited land consultant. I believe there's about 550 of us right now in the United States, and our organization, the Realtors Land Institute, which this show is dedicated to, we have about 1,300 members out of, 1.3 realtors in the United States. So we're a very small group, but we're a very dynamic group, and I'm proud to be part of it and proud to know you, Justin.
You too, Lou. Definitely an honor.
So you're with the Wells Group, and you're calling in from Durango, Colorado. Is that right?
Yes, sir, it is.
Well, you sound like you're just next door. So you're originally from Rockwell, Texas. Where's that? What's that in relationship to Durango? Quite a few miles.
It's about 888 miles from Durango, Colorado. It's just east of Dallas.
I got you. So you went camping in Colorado and never came home?
That's pretty much it. Grew up camping in the mountains in the summertime because that's all we could afford to do for a vacation. And I said, this Texas heat in the summer is for the birds. And
you
I
got
left.
It. So you got there in around 1999. You have a wife and two children. We were talking about them, some soccer players. You attended Fort Lewis College, where you received a business degree in business administration with the emphasis in marketing and a major in agribusiness. Has that agribusiness helped you a lot in your real estate practice?
Yes, sir, it sure has. Yeah, there's sure been a lot of crossover because of the stuff that I learned at Fort Lewis College and kind of the transfer that it does over to the recreational real estate that I'm doing now.
I got you. So you got your real estate license back in 2003 when you were a junior in college. What, with all the college curriculum, what so possessed you to get your real estate license?
Yeah, I got my real estate license actually in 2002. It's been, over 17 years now that I've been doing this.
Right. You started with Caldwell Banker's Heritage House, I believe, for several years. And while you were Caldwell Banker's, you were the top producer award. I'll tell about some of your accolades, which is quite impressive. And you joined the Wells Group in 2010, and you've been the top producer there both in volume and total number of deals. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you, sir. We've got a good group over here, and there's definitely a few of us that are top producers here, kind of taking all the market share around Southwest Colorado. It's certainly a good group of individuals.
So are you selling a lot of ranches out there or vacant land, recreational land, which is our topic today?
Yeah, we're selling more ranches than anybody else, certainly a whole lot of recreational land. Just due to how close to Durango we are, we sell a lot of residential, and we're doing some subdivision development. But the recreational land and the farm and ranch land that does sell, we certainly do more of it than anybody else around.
Good for you. Now, tell me about the Wells Group. What are they about? How long have they been around?
Wells Group's been around for over 30 years in downtown Durango, and it is the only full-service real estate brokerage that employs full-time brokers only. We do not have any part-time realtors working for us.
That's interesting.
It's definitely the best of the best. We've got market share, and we cover multiple states. Myself, I'm licensed in Colorado as well in New Mexico.
Okay. And by the way, I just want to give you a kudo here. You received the Colorado Land Realtor of the Year. The Realtors Land Institute, we were, I believe, around 76 years old now. and we have 16 chapters around the country. Some of them are multi-state, like our chapters, the Carolinas chapter, which is North Carolina and South Carolina. And each of these chapters annually will award one of their members the Land Realtor of the Year. I've been awarded it twice in my career, but that's quite an honor to be recognized, especially from the Colorado chapter, which is probably, I'd say, the number one chapter in our organization. You guys really got it going on out there.
Well, thank you, Lou. Yeah, it definitely was an honor. You know, out of, oh, I don't know how many thousands of realtors there are in Colorado, and certainly we've got about 115 in our Colorado chapter. It was certainly an honor to be named the Colorado Land Realtor of the Year a few years back.
How many members do you have out there that are active in your chapter?
Right now, I believe we have around 115 active members in the Colorado RLI chapter.
That's great. That's great. And you were the chapter president 2015 to 2017, and that's quite an honor to be there, too. I've done it twice, actually, over the years. I've been involved in our chapter since 1998, and I've been on the board every year except one, so they can't get rid of me, I guess because I hold the hole. But what we wanted to do, I want to talk a little bit about, of course, the Realtors Land Institute. And I'd like to dedicate this show to Jimmy Settle. You know, we lost him last year. He was our president out of Tennessee. And if that's okay with you, he was made quite an impact on our organization over the years. And he's sorely missed, by the way. But we have, just briefly, in the Realtors Land Institute, our designation, which is quite hard to achieve, by the way, is the accredited land consultant designation. As I mentioned, there's about 550 of those. And we have 10 courses right now. Those change from time to time. We've had as many as 15 over the years. But if I may, these are two-day courses tested at the end, certified courses. You have to have 3 required courses and 3 elective courses. I teach the Land 101 fundamental course. I just got back from Tulsa, Oklahoma, a couple weeks ago, and then just taught it again in Asheville last Thursday and Friday, North Carolina. But I've taught about 60 of those over the years around the country. But our classes are agricultural land brokers. And by the way, I've interviewed instructors of all the classes except for the new one, which just came out. And Justin, you're honored to be one of the instructors for that, and that's what we want to focus on today is recreational land. But we have a 2-day course on agricultural land brokerage and marketing. Of course, we have the Land 101 Fundamentals of Land Brokerage. We have the Land Investment Analysis, and that's actually a 2.5-day course. It's a spreadsheet course for it's more for businesses, land businesses. And then we've got the Land Real Estate Site Selection course. We have a Mapping and Technologies and Techniques course with MapRight, who I'd like to toot the horn. We use them quite frequently. Steve does a great job with his company and also as an instructor. We have a subdivision land class, which was the old class. Ned Messi, first class I took was in 97, and after I took that class, I had the confidence, and I've developed over 60 rural subdivisions since then. We have a tax-deferred 1031 exchange. We have a timberland class. We have a transitional land class. We have, obviously, the recreational class. And that's what we want to focus in on today. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about the recreational class and what's involved in it?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, it's certainly an honor to be one of the 2 instructors that were selected to teach this course. And it really came about because of our members in our organization, Lou. You know, there's always been, I think, recreational land changing hands, you know, for the past, golly, probably 50 years or so, but we didn't really call it that. You know, people would buy a farm, they'd buy a ranch, and they'd do a little hunting on it, they'd do a little fishing on it, but it was because of the demand that we heard from our RLI members saying, you know, we'd really like to have a course, a class, and how to learn, how do you value an elk hunting property or a fly fishing property or a duck hunting property or a property that we can go camping on. And so it really came because we saw kind of a glitch in the industry where appraisers were having a hard time valuing them and realtors were having a hard time you know, pricing them because they were strictly based off of a recreational value and not so much off of, you know, what kind of crops they could produce or certain other things like that. So it's a good course that came out of the demand for the members and requesting that we put some material together. And we've done that. The course itself is consisted of, we've got 5 modules. Most of them are kind of hands-on stuff that can attribute value, you know, how realtors can determine how one property could be worth more than another one based on the wildlife that it might hold or the amount of river frontage that it might have, if it has year-round access or not. And then we talk about how to market them. You know, it's a totally different type of marketing compared to just putting a sign on the property and putting it in a website and hoping it sells. You know, there's a lot of strategic marketing that we cover in the course on how to really attract buyers to these types of properties. So it's a lot of fun. I think the students that are in the classes have provided some great feedback. It's a very hands-on course. There's a lot of interaction. It's certainly not a lecture-type format. But it's been fun to teach.
I bet it has. I'd like to teach it myself, actually. With the new format that we have on our classes, we're rewriting all of them. We're actually setting up where any of the instructors can teach any of the classes. And it's pretty neat the way they've done it, done a good job on that. I was just looking at the and thank you for sending me a copy of it. I've really enjoyed going through it. It says, upon the completion of the course, the participants will be able to define what recreational land is. What does that mean?
Well, it's really just kind of defining, all right, if a client thinks, you know, a lot of times I'm dealing with farmers out here in Southern Colorado that maybe they think the buyer for their property is going to be a farm or a farm operator. But with the price per acre the way it is, we're just not seeing that happen anymore. The younger generations are not getting into the farming like they used to. And so a lot of times the highest and best use for a property may be something totally different than what the owner thinks it is. And so what I like to try to do in the course is really educate the members and the realtors that are in there on how to define, all right, is this property that's been used as a farm or a ranch really the highest and best use, or is there a recreational value where, you know, somebody may be willing to pay a much higher price per acre because of the 400 class elk that it holds, you know, or the 18-inch brown trout that are in the river, those types of things that a farmer or rancher may not be thinking about.
Right. You know, the beginning of it, and I probably should have started there, and I apologize, but it says, recreational land real estate is a diverse and growing segment within the land industry. Statistically, we've noted this in the last 2 years, recreational land is just probably the hottest land out there that's selling right now. Regional opportunities exist in land sales used for hunting, for fishing, for boating, for ranching, for camping, and more. And the overall goal, of course, of the course is to introduce the real estate professionals to the tools needed to work with buyers and sellers and all the different types of recreational property. You got a question, Teresa?
Yeah, I was just sitting here wondering if the value of a recreational tract is determined, like, does it fluctuate based on the type of recreational land that it is?
Yes, ma'am, it sure does. Yeah, you know, the stuff that I've seen sell for probably the highest value is going to be the waterfront, specifically riverfront properties for fly fishing. You know, we could have one stream running through a certain part of Colorado that may only pull $7,000 or $8,000 an acre because of the size of fish that are in it or the type of fish that are in it. And you could go one county over to a different stream that's going to pull $10,000 or $12,000 an acre because of the superior fishing that it offers. And so, yeah, the riverfront properties will always bring a higher price per acre compared to some of the other recreational properties.
Perfect. We're going to continue. This is our good friend Justin Osborne, and this is Let's Talk Land. Justin, so we're talking about recreational land, and Teresa had a good comment. Just going down this course outline, How would you define recreational land as opposed to the other types?
Well, it's pretty diverse. You know, when you're dealing with recreational land, it could be a hunting property, a fishing property. Where I'm at in the Rocky Mountains, there's a lot of people that are buying smaller tracts next to National Forest or BLM just for hiking. There could be boating and water sports. We've got kind of a thing taking off out here in the mountains. It's called glamping, G-L-A-M-P-I-N-G, glamping. It's glamorous camping where these tourists are literally paying over $1,000 a night to go stay on a ranch that offers phenomenal fly fishing and sleep in a tent. It's almost like a big African tent, like they're on some type of safari up in the Rocky Mountains, and it's absolutely crazy what they're spending to go spend the night in the woods. But it's a huge market right now.
Hey, Teresa, I know what we can start. We can start us a galloping, you call it?
Glamping.
Glamping. Glamping. Let's start us a glamping.
I love it.
Yeah? And we can bring the doggies. They can do the entertaining. I love it. Wow. Trace, you got a question?
No, I was just sitting here, and I was wondering about the average size. Are there average size tracks? Like, is there a track size that's too small for recreational?
Yeah, it definitely varies across the country. I think, you know, where we're at, we've got a lot of section, township, range, legal descriptions. And so what we end up with, you know, is a section of land being 640 acres, and then it's easy to subdivide it down from there. So we'll end up with half a section being 320, and then you keep breaking it down to typically as small as a 40-acre parcel where we're at. It's really easy to create 40-acre parcels without having to go through any type of zoning or planning government officials. And so most of the recreational properties that I'm seeing are 40-acre parcels up in the mountains near the National Forest where somebody can kind of create, you know, a little base camp or a hunting camp and then have access to millions of acres right out their back door.
Oh.
Hey, there was something that I saw not long, well, it's been quite a few years ago, but bird watching, that's supposed to be one of the biggest recreational hobbies in the world. I mean, it's like the largest. Have you ever heard that? Bird watching?
Yeah, I have. You know, where we are at, it's a lot, mostly eagles, and people, you know, try to get stuff next to the river so they can see the eagles. But I have heard, especially down in Florida and Georgia and off of parts of the Gulf of Mexico, off of Texas, where that's been real popular for bird watching.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess you could buy some bird watching land if you wanted to.
But definitely.
What's some of the terminology that we use with relationship to recreational land that we wouldn't use for development land or other agricultural land or timberland? And by the way, your recreational land can have timber and it can have pasture and it can have all the above and still be recreational land.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's one of the best stories I've got on terminology is we were talking about the tanks that were on a property for duck hunting. And we were talking, I think there were 6 or 8 tanks that were on this property, and they were stock tanks, you know, for feeding cattle, but the birds would come in and land on them, and
right.
we were using the word tanks to describe them, and this guy stopped, and he said, "Now, I'm totally confused. How in the world are y'all getting these ducks to land on these bulldozer tanks?" He thought we were talking about, like, bulldozer and army tanks that were out on the property, and so it's crazy. Just the difference in terminology when you're talking about, you know, land in general.
Exactly.
And selling these types of properties, it's definitely an education that you got to make sure the public understands when you're writing these descriptions and when you're referencing the types of features and attributes that a property can have. I got educated one time selling a recreational property because the buyer was asking me all kind of questions about slope of a property and if it was in the shades and in the dark timber, and I said, yeah, it definitely is, you know, and those are all questions a big elk hunter is going to ask. And this guy showed up to look at the property, and he was a mushroom hunter. He was buying mushrooms, foraging in the forest, for the high-end restaurants that were around town. And so I sold a recreational property to a mushroom hunter that I never would have thought would have bought it. I would have sworn that would have been an elk
hunting
property that somebody would have purchased.
Wow, that's interesting.
Justin, are slopes, because sometimes people will ask me, they'll say, well, if the land slopes, I don't want it. So are slopes, can they be good as well as bad?
Well, they can. It really depends on what the end use is. You know, for somebody that wants to build, you know, especially a cabin or some type of home or a barn to put an RV in, slope can definitely be a challenge because just cutting in a road and retaining walls around the improvements. But a lot of the outdoorsmen like the steeper slopes because they'll have a tendency to hold elk in the bottom of a canyon. So the short answer is it depends on what their final goal is. But we'll certainly have a lot of properties that are on the side of a hill that you wouldn't think have much use for, but we'll end up selling it for recreational use.
Yeah, I think it depends is the most used phrase in real estate.
My forester sure like
it
using
depends.
That word. It depends.
I hear that a lot.
Yep, it depends. Hey, here's some stats just for craziness. 22% of private land is leased or owned for wildlife association recreation. Annual spending for wildlife associated recreation, $814 million in day use fees, and then $1.4 billion in long-term leases, and $14.8 billion, can see the decimal, billion in ownership of land owned primarily for recreation. Hunting accounts for about 81% of the total recreational acreage, or about 358 million acres. Hunters own or lease larger portions than any others. These are stats off of the presentation, by the way. And then they say private grazing land and forest land are the primary land uses associated with recreation. America spends about $17 billion to access or own private land for wildlife-associated recreation. And landowners with recreational income have higher participation in government conservation programs. That's interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of money exchanging hands.
Yeah, really. We like to be party to that, don't we?
Yes, sir.
So what makes property suitable for recreation use?
Well, there's a lot of different things. I think the biggest where we're at is going to be the surrounding properties. You know, if I've got a 40-acre property that borders, let's say it borders 30,000 acres of national forest, then there's a very good chance that's going to be a recreational buyer that purchases that, as opposed to, you know, one of the listings I have right now is a 40-acre piece with a 3-acre subdivision on three sides of it that kind of wraps around it.
Right.
You know, there's a slim chance, I guess, a bow hunter could buy that, Lou, but that's not likely going to be a recreational play. That's probably going to be a developer that purchases that. So I think one of the biggest things is the neighboring properties and what they're like. Are they gonna support and encourage recreational use, or are you going to be upsetting a lot of neighbors?
Yeah. And you know, with the recreational industry, vehicle industry, the four-wheelers, side-by-sides, you know, that's really driving a lot of people, isn't it? I mean, that's real popular.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, there's a lot of places where you can ride those side-by-sides and get out into the mountains or into the desert and go have some fun. And so that's been a huge push is if there is immediate access to public land. It doesn't even have to border it.
Right.
But if there's, well, I'm listing a property outside of Chama, New Mexico this week where one of the big things we're pushing is the 30,000-acre recreational state wildlife area. It's only a mile down the road, and so while it doesn't border it, it's close enough where somebody can go down there and go horseback riding or go ATV riding or, you know, go enjoy some bird watching, whatever it is, just right down the road because of how close those recreational opportunities are to this ranch.
Yeah. I had the privilege of marketing and selling a 68-acre tract. We have Hanging Rock State Park in Stokes County, north of Winston-Salem. It's right around 7,000 acres. It's only closed one day of the year. It's got like a 17-acre lake. The CCC boys built it back during the Roosevelt, during the Depression. It was one of their projects with the camping and trails galore. And this particular property, Jason, was boarded. The park boarded it on three sides. So, you know, the investor that bought it, you know, I kept saying, you know, you're not buying 68 acres. You're buying 7,068 acres, you know, because you got it's a, right. It's a public park. I'm getting ready to list another one, by the way, that joins the same park that's hope to get on the market here pretty soon. But, you know, I always we're going to talk about value next, I'd like to, because that's something that Teresa wants to know about specifically. But I always use as a rule of thumb, and I kind of teach this, is anything that has river frontage, I usually add 1,000 an acre more to it. And if it has a state or national park adjoining it, I use the same amount over and above what the current market value is. What do you guys use out your way?
Well, it really depends on if
see, we're back to depends, Teresa.
extremely close by. And so you might think, Lou, that it's always an added value, but where we're at, you can really get some negatives if you are buying a property that borders public land and there's a public trailhead within, you know, a half a mile of there. That means come hunting season, you're going to have a lot of guys walking your fence line with a rifle in their hand.
Yeah.
So it could actually have a negative value depending on how close those public trailheads are.
Interesting.
Well, that's what I was sitting here wondering. Are you not limited to what you can do on state land? I mean, if it's a state park.
You can't hunt on it.
I mean,
you can't hunt on it.
Like, you couldn't just go out there and sit down and camp on it, could you? Even if you own land right beside of it.
Oh, no. We're going to have to get the rule book
out. You'd be limited, I would think.
I'm sorry, Teresa, can you say that again? I was having a hard time hearing you.
Wouldn't you be limited to what you could use the land that's backed up to the state park for?
If it's your own property and there's no covenants, no restrictions, no conservation easement, then no, there's going to be very little limitations outside of any type of, you know, zoning the county might have that restricts commercial use. But that's why a lot of the properties we're selling, we advertise no HOAs, no covenants, no restrictions, because some of those buyers want to do different things. But the minute you get across the fence line onto public property, absolutely, there's lots of restrictions on that. You know, people can't just go ride their ATVs or their side-by-sides all over the forest. They've got to stick on designated trails. Sometimes they even close parts of the national forest or the state wildlife areas for elk migrations where I'm at. So you certainly need to be aware of what the restrictions are in those areas.
So you still have to follow the rules of the park. You can't just go in there and do whatever you want just because your land borders it.
Well, right. Yeah, I'd say you would, or you may get arrested.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't want to be arrested.
So, valuing land, recreational land, is there a trick to that? Is there something that we need to justify?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to do it is kind of like appraising any other type of property, whether it's residential or commercial or a lot in a subdivision. If you can find something similar that sold within the past 6 or 12 months, then that's great. But similar is a kind of a loose word. I've never sold two recreational properties that were similar, to be honest with you. So there's a lot of adjustments and calculations that have to be made. But the biggest things that we're looking at is what types of features does the property have? Does it offer year-round access, or do they close off access in the wintertime because of maybe there's too much snow or too rough of a winter to get to it? Utilities make a big difference. You know, if a property has electric to it, compared to if a buyer is going to build a cabin and they've got to go solar, that can make a big difference.
Right.
When we're dealing with recreational properties in Texas, there's a lot of hunting blinds and game feeders, and the condition of those can certainly make a difference in the value. You know, if they're $8,000 tower blinds that are 20 feet in the air compared to 20-year-old box blinds laying on the ground, that can sure make a difference in how quick a property sells and the price it'll sell for. So there's a lots of different kind of features that I'd say like that can affect the value.
Okay. We're talking to Justin Osborne today. This is Let's Talk Land. So, Justin, we're kind of talking about values of recreational land, trying to identify those unique features or attributes that maybe call out recreational land different than, say, ag land, timber land, development land, and other types of land. So what are we missing? What did we miss? In terms
of there's certainly other things that can contribute value. You know, water sources, whether it's just livestock ponds or running rivers, creeks, or even just water wells where somebody may go and install some pipe with some food plots that are being irrigated with a sprinkler. You know, those can definitely affect the value. And I think the more water a property has, you know, I guess you can always have too much water in certain areas and have the risk of flooding. But most of the properties I see, the more water you have, the better, because that usually attracts wildlife.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, there can be negatives that deter value. I've seen different types of easements over the years, access easements that go through one ranch to get to another one. And, you know, nobody likes somebody else driving across their property, especially at, you know, 5:30 in the morning when they're getting ready to go do some hunting. So easements that cross the property can certainly encumber it and deter value. Another type of easement is conservation easement.
Yeah.
I'm a conservationist myself, and I'm all for conserving the land and protecting the land from future development. And, you know, preserving the land for the wildlife. What sellers need to realize, though, is that when they put a conservation easement on a property, they do encumber it and they restrict it from future development. And that may deter the value in some buyers' minds, not all. But the more easements that a property has, typically speaking, the harder it is to sell and the less it'll sell for. So owners just need to realize that ahead of time prior to agreeing to putting those easements across their properties.
We had a big discussion about conservation easements in my Land 101 class last year in Asheville, last week in Asheville. And, you know, the ones that I've been involved with, never listed one, don't know that I really want to, but what I saw on a couple occasions is, you know, when you set up a conservation easement, you're getting federal and sometimes state credits, and that's real money. And so to me, that's actually taking the asset away from the property, plus the restrictions you put on it. But the sellers that I've seen, the listings that I've seen out there, is they're still wanting retail prices for it. And I can't quite justify that in my head. You know, if say like you paid 100 acres, you paid five an acre, $500,000, and you put it in a conservation easement, and you get $250,000 worth of credits, you know, but now you still want $500,000 for it. The buyer's not going to be able to take any advantage of those credits. The seller's already taken those. What do you think about that?
Well, you're exactly right, Lou. And wanting a certain price and getting a certain price are certainly two different things.
Exactly.
And in education, usually I'm the second or third realtor by the time that comes around to a seller, because the previous two just didn't even know that. And so it's an education process with the sellers. And you certainly hit the nail on the head. Yeah, they're getting the benefit. It is real money. And if they want to sell in our current real estate market, it typically means that they've got to reduce the price, you know, by 25 or 35% of what it would not be if it did not have that conservation easement encumbering the property.
Yeah. And there's other factors, too. You know, it may be property that has fencing on it, may have some structural buildings on it, may have some duck hunting blinds. You know, sometimes the seller, you know, when they sell everything. And, of course, that's going to add to the attractiveness of it, I would say, from a marketing side. But it's also going to benefit the buyer, too, not to have to spend that additional money, you know, for those particular improvements. So we got to take that into factor too, right?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, it may not add a significant value to the property, but it could certainly help it sell if there's good fencing, because the fences could hold cattle. And when there's cattle on a property, it can make a huge difference in taxes and holding costs.
Yeah.
And so if a buyer is looking at fences, it'll hold cattle. You know, it could save him $20,000 or $30,000 a year in taxes if he can lease that to a rancher that can graze cattle on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it needs a lot of work on the fences, he's not going to be able to do that. So
right.
Those types of things can definitely affect the value and how quickly a property sells.
So what are the steps in identifying recreational land?
Well, the steps in identifying it is really trying to figure out, all right, what I look at is, okay, is this accessible to kind of the common public, or is it something that's going to be extremely tough to get to that's not going to be easy to sell? And so access is kind of the first thing that I look at.
Okay.
Where I'm at out here in the Rocky Mountains. The other thing I'll look at is, you know, what the wildlife habitat is. There's a lot of 160-acre parcels that just are full of native grass that don't have hardly an animal on them. You know, at one time they might have held some pheasants and some quail, but there's not a recreational value there like a 160-acre tract full of timber that's actually going to hold some wildlife. So just looking at the vegetation right off the bat can really answer, all right, is this going to be a recreational play, or is this just going to be somebody who's, you know, land banking, throwing some money in some land, hoping that maybe it goes up at some point over the next 5 or 10 years?
Sure. And traditionally, land's the best investment there is. It's proven, go keep your old stocks and bonds and your gold in your lockbox. You know, I'd rather have land, something I can enjoy with my family and still maintain, you know, my investment long term. So,
you're absolutely right. A lot of my clients say the same thing, Lou, and that's what's hard to put a value on, is because you can put a value on a stock or on a bond or, you know, on some row crops, but how do you put a value on, you know, grandpa teaching his grandson how to shoot a turkey, or, you know, dad teaching his son how to catch a trout out of the fly river or fly fishing river? You know, those are just really, really hard to put values on because they're emotional values.
Yeah.
They're not values that are the same for everybody.
Exactly. So how does recreational land produce income? Let's go and talk about that a little bit. Because, you know, the word on the street is, you know, if I buy land, I mean, you can't make any money if you buy land. And that's just totally wrong. There's all kinds of ways. Specifically for recreational land, what would you cue us to?
Yeah, there are, and, you know, it's certainly changed. 10 years ago, I didn't even know the word glamping, you know, glamorous,
yeah,
and camping combined.
We'll have to look that one up, Teresa.
I told you all to go about these guys pulling $1,000 a night for people to go sleep on a tent in their property is just
that's
baffling
crazy
to me.
Yeah, we got to look into that, Teresa.
That's one way you could, you know, open up something like that. Where we're at, we're seeing people paying trespass fees, which is just strictly what they sound. It's the right to cross the property to get to somewhere else. And
okay.
So the public will pay a trespass fee to maybe cross a rancher's land to get to some public land that the public typically could not get to.
We haven't seen that here. No, I'm just saying we haven't seen that here.
Okay. Yeah, it may be coming. If you've got some really sought after public land that's hard for the public to get to, then, you know, it may be coming. But where we're at, we've got so many mountains that, you know, you could maybe just want to go 4 or 5 miles, but you may have to drive 30 miles to get there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you can pay a rancher to cross his property and get to that public land, then people are sure doing it. We got private landowner tags, what they call PLO tags for wildlife, where people were actually, you know, getting elk and deer tags issued and to these ranchers, and people are paying pretty high prices, anywhere from, you know, $2,500 to $6,500 for just the opportunity to go shoot a big buck or to shoot a big elk on their property. So there's a lot of different ways to generate revenue when it comes to recreational land, but sometimes it's maybe thinking outside the box.
Right. Well, you know, you always have your timber. Your timber is always value, and it's cash value, you know, so you can't forget about that. If you have pasture land or ag land, obviously you could lease that and create income, you know. So there's all kinds of programs out there to support generating income for land. Is anything we're missing?
You know, I'm sure there probably is, but those are probably the most popular ones that we both discussed there.
So how would you advise a client about buying recreational land? That's part of your course.
Well, I always try to ask them up front what their goal is. You know, are they wanting to make some money? Are they wanting to just get away for the weekend with their family? Are they wanting to kind of just enjoy some quality time with their kids? Or are they needing to entertain clients? I try to find out their motives right up front.
Right.
And then a lot of times I always try to ask them about their exit strategy, you know, being in this business.
Oh, yeah.
My wife gives me a hard time saying I'm always thinking about resale.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I do the same thing with my clients because recreational land is a lot of times extremely hard to finance. I try to make sure that a buyer up front, even though they may be paying cash, let them know that, look, when you go to sell this in 7 or 10 years, you may need to consider doing an owner carry.
Right.
Because it's not like a buyer can just go and get a residential mortgage where they can finance it over 30 years, or they can go get a loan from the ag credit company because it's not an ag property. So they're a lot harder to turn whenever it comes time to try to get somebody to get a loan. So I'm trying to just make sure my buyers know that up front before, you know, they get invested into a property and then call me 7 years later saying, man, Osborne, you didn't tell me this was going to be hard to sell.
Right. Yeah, that's something that's a policy in our company, and I actually teach it in my classes and have for years. And when a client comes in, I said, we're not talking about buying prop land. We're talking about selling it. We've got to look at selling it, not buying it. You make your money when you buy it, if you buy it right, and then, of course, the normal appreciation. But you have to have an out clause because people's lifestyles change. There's all kinds of things that happen that maybe that they weren't able to fulfill their dream. And they call you back up and say, Lou, I need to get rid of this property. And normally what we do is we do a highest and best use analysis of the property for potential heirs, like estate planning. I do estate planning for all of my clients that want it. And I don't actually charge for that. It's just part of my service. So that they know at some time in the future, I'm not around. You know, I hit the big 70 this year. So, you know, we'll just keep going, we hope. But, you know, that there'll be some type of professional plan for liquidation of the property, whether you're subdividing it and so on. And, of course, you still have the timber factor. You know, that's always cash if you need it and a very quick sale. Not that you want to do it, but, you know, I always let my clients know that push comes to shove and you need to raise $20,000 pretty quick, where are you going to get it? You know, that's another alternative too. And back to financing, of course, we're all part of the Farm Credit. National name, Farm Credit, each area, because it's a co-op. The United States was broken up into territories years ago, back in 46, after it was started in 1916 by the federal government. But, you know, they have the best programs for land financing, but you're looking probably 20, 25% down, and they'll only go out 20 years. But the other banks, because the Farmer Mac program and the unique programs that they have, it's hard to compete with Farm Credit, so we'll give them a toot and horn, too. I'm sure you guys have them out your way, too.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we sure do.
All right. What else can we talk about? Recreational land.
Well, you know, along those same lines of kind of what am I doing up front, I'm certainly not an attorney or an accountant or a tax advisor, but I tell the buyers that when they're thinking about that exit strategy, they certainly need to think about the tax implications that could apply because, you know, it's not like selling a primary residence where you can not have, you know, capital gains if you're selling your primary residence and you've been in it for 2 years and, you know, you're a single individual, you can claim up to $250,000 or a married couple $500 without having to pay Uncle Sam. And it's
right.
A lot different when you're selling these recreational properties. So I just like to try to advise my buyers up front that they really just need to consider that and talk to their accountant. And when it gets time for an exit strategy, to maybe consider a 1031. You know, a lot of them are coming in with 1031 money, so they're properly educated on that.
Yes, sir.
But some of them, it's their first time buying recreational land, and so I just don't want to be on the other end a few years down the road where, you know, they're thinking I didn't give them some valuable information that I should have.
Yeah. Well, you're a good seasoned land broker, so we all learned it from the Realtors Land Institute, right? So, I mean, we're so lucky to have the staff that we have and the programs that we have. People don't realize when we go to real estate school, the syllabus is in each state's different. In North Carolina, it's 180 hours plus an additional 330-hour classes to move from a provisional to a full-line broker. And by the way, we went over 111,000 licensed agents in North Carolina, which is kind of crazy. But there just isn't any land education other than the Realtors Land Institute and the classes we offer. And I created a four-hour class. We have to have eight-hour CE in North Carolina several years ago called Introduction to Land Brokerage, which I got to teach down in Charlotte, North Carolina, in Brunswick County last week as well. But it's the only land class ever in the history of North Carolina, and I'm the only land instructor. And then as I go around, like Colorado, if you guys, if you called up your commission, Justin, do you guys have a CE-accredited class other than RLI on the subject of land? I can't find any state that does, quite frankly.
You know, the state of Colorado does not. Now, we certainly open up our RLI Colorado chapter education classes to the state members, and we certainly have some of them show up and attend. And
sure.
It seems like they are always telling us how valuable they are and how much they learn. But as far as the Colorado Association of Realtors, I think you're absolutely correct, Lou. I'm not aware of any CE credit that is a specific land course out there.
Yeah, that's it. The public out there thinks because you have that realtor designation, you can do anything. Well, yeah, I can, but do I know what I'm doing? Of course, our code of ethics says we shouldn't do that, and I was responsible for getting land included in Article 11 in our code of ethics, believe it or not. I instigated that back in 2008, and it was approved in 2010. So land is now considered a specialty like commercial and residential and property management and so on. I just saw something that I kind of liked, and you have a copy of it I sent to you. I don't know where I got this, but it's just talking about the different things for recreational land. Family time. With fast-paced life, quality family time is hard to come by. Owning recreational land provides an opportunity for the family to spend time away from the distractions of everyday life. Of course, you got camping. Create your own campground, fire pits, tents. Have your RVs, the best spot. Hunting, obviously, avoid the crowds. You've got your own land to hunt on. And by the way, on hunting, do you guys ever get involved in hunting leases? I do not, because we had an agent years ago that got involved in a transaction of a hunting lease, and the person got killed. And, of course, everybody got sued, and he lost his home over a daggum hunting lease. So I do not advocate that. There's plenty of hunters out there that know where to go, and I don't want to be guiding them or protecting. Privacy, when you own some acreage, you can get away and enjoy the sounds and the wilderness. Wildlife, the woods and the critters out there. My dog loves, I take a run it every day. And now we got the recreational vehicles. These are some of the things. Horseback riding, build your own corral, have your own stalls, have your own riding trails. Firewood, stop purchasing firewood from the town. Make your own weekend and cut firewood. Cabins in the woods, just a little comfort place to get outdoors and be away and be in nature. And proximity to public lands, like you mentioned one earlier, didn't join the national park, but it wasn't far from it. So, that's another reason. And selecting recreational land, where am I going to get it? And then, of course, the family values and memories. Life comes with a fast pace every day. Influence of society is not always what we would choose for our family, so you create your own environment with your recreational land. What could be better, Teaching children, like you said, how to hunt and skills. And I'm an old Eagle Scout and spent about a year of my life on the ground. And what a grounding it's meant to me all these years. Timber value, we mentioned that. And then, of course, your land appreciates. So what's wrong with this?
Yeah, it definitely does, and I think that, those are all great kind of attributes of owning land. It's just so hard to put a price tag on spending quality time with your family in the outdoors. And having kids myself, some of the best memories we have is sitting around a campfire, roasting marshmallows and spending time together as a family. And I think that if, there was just more dads that would do that with their kids, I think this world might be a little bit better place.
Amen. Teresa, you look puzzled over there.
Nope, I'm just sitting here thinking. I've camped a lot in the woods, and I've always enjoyed it, and I think it's very important for people to have family time.
So what do you think about this recreational class we got? Is it something you'd like to take?
Yeah, it sounds interesting. Huh? Sounds great.
Learn just a different niche, a different way of marketing, a different product.
Well, I was wondering how he's marketing his land, because that's something you guys touched on, but we really haven't discussed it.
Justin, it's your turn. Marketing recreational land.
Definitely a good marketing package, you know, that I think every listing agent should put together. Something as simple as maps. Just be surprised at how many brokers just don't put together good mapping software.
Or none at all.
And the technology's out there, you know, whether it's TerraStride or MapRight, you know, both of them are really good affiliates with RLI.
Absolutely.
But if you're a real estate broker in today's age and you don't have a subscription to this mapping software, you need to get one, because it is just so amazing how a buyer can be sitting behind their desk in Austin, Texas, and be looking at one of my properties that's 1,000 miles away, and they can understand the lay of the land, the topography, and, you know, the canyons that are on the property. And I'm a firm believer that when buyers come to my town and look at listings, they're going to look at the ones that they understand the most.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's my listings, and it's because of my mapping software. So I think maps are very important to have in your marketing, Teresa. I think anything that's on the property, a barn, a shop, overhead doors, buyers want those details. So instead of a residential broker might say, you know, there's a large shop with an overhead door on the property. Well, is the shop 40 by 70 or 40 by 80? And is it an 8-foot overhead door, or is it a 14-foot overhead door with somebody with Class A motorhome can actually get it in there? Does it have 220, or, you know, what type of electrical hookups does it have? So I'm a big fan for going as detailed as possible and really trying to think, okay, if I'm buying this property and I'm a recreational buyer, what am I going to want to know? I could probably care less about the stainless steel appliances and granite counters that are in the cabin. I want to know, you know, what's the access like? Am I going to be able to get to it in January, February, March when there's 3 feet of snow on the ground? Or, you know, do they close the gates on me? So those types of things, putting in your marketing package, it's totally different hat than what a residential realtor might be thinking needs to go in there.
And I'm sure you're using the drones and GoPros too. We all are.
Oh, yeah, we've got drone videos, and, you know, we've got professional voiceovers that we're putting in them. We got game cameras, it seems like, set up all over southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, capturing photographs of wildlife that are on our ranches. So, you know, the more photographs, the more video, the better, it seems like, for most of these buyers.
Hey, Justin, with about maybe 3 or 4 minutes left, tell us about your market, what's out there, what land prices are selling for, and I know that varies, but just kind of give us an overview. Why would I want to come to Durango, Colorado, and your area out there?
Well, it's extremely diverse, Lou. I could show you $800 to $1,000 an acre land within 30 minutes of Durango, and I could take you up by Purgatory Ski Area and show you $200,000 an acre land, all in the same county. And so, you know, that's what I really love about it, though, is that, you know, we can be riding four-wheelers kind of out in the high country, the high desert in February, and that same afternoon we could be up at, you know, the ski area making turns in the powder. And so where we are at here in southwest Colorado is extremely diverse topography, and our real estate and our prices kind of go hand in hand with that. So it's kind of fun. Because no two properties that I sell are ever the same.
It's sort of like where we are, Teresa. You know, we got the mountains, the Blue Ridge, and then we got the rolling lands, and then we got some flatlands further south you go. And we got a lot of diversity here, a lot of rivers, a lot of water here. No lakes, no big lakes. Charlotte, Lake Norman is probably the biggest, and Smith Mountain Lake in Virginia would be the two. But we have the same situation you do, and you get up to Boone, up in that area, and you got the ski slopes. You can be there in an hour and 45 minutes and in the powder there. So, you know, we're kind of diverse here too. We like our backyard as well. So so business is good.
Well, that's great. Yeah, we absolutely love it here. It's a great place to raise a family. I feel very blessed to be able to be here and, you know, be able to pass along the knowledge that I've had to learn the hard way, you know, that we didn't have these instructors or these courses when I got my license. It was all just so much about the residential front. Yeah. So I definitely feel honored to be asked to be an instructor and be passed along the stuff that I've had to learn the hard way so that people can be a heck of a lot more educated than I was when I first started out in this business.
Well, you got it made and you don't know it. And we're glad to have you be part of our organization, Justin. I tell you, you're a great asset. And see if you can clone yourself, okay?
All right, yeah. I don't know how much my wife would appreciate that, but, yeah, we'll certainly see what we can do.
So just a little bit more about your company. How many agents do you have out there?
At the Wells Group, we have 52 licensed realtors.
Full-time.
Full-time agents, and this is their primary job. Nobody part-time here at the Wells Group.
Boy, that's great. That's something maybe we need to look at, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yep.
Yeah, we need some more. All right. So give us a little bit of commercial, how we can get in touch with you. We've enjoyed your contributions today. I'm anxious to take the class, and I know Teresa would like to take the class. Maybe we can trade. We'll get you here to North Carolina, and you guys get me out there to Colorado, and we'll switch out. But it'd be a great honor to have you instruct our members of our Carolina chapter, and we'll see if we can work on that for next year, Justin. How do they get in touch with you if someone wants to?
Well, yeah, Lou, I'd be happy to come out there. I know we're going to be teaching the class. Looks like I'm following your footsteps going to Oklahoma. I'm going to be in Oklahoma on February 18th and 19th with
okay.
their RLI chapter out there
yep.
teaching the recreational land class. I know they'd certainly welcome anybody from across the country that wanted to attend. If somebody has any questions about that, they can either give me a call at 970-946-3935.
Okay, and what's your email?
They can send me an email. It's pretty simple. It's just my name, Justin@WellsGroupDurango.com. Justin@WellsGroupDurango.com. And that's simply our website, WellsGroupDurango.com. People can go on there. They can find me. They can find my listings. They can send me an email. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or help anybody out there in any way that I can.
All right. Well, you've been a great guest. And you can also go to our website, www.rli.com, and find a educated land person. All right. Thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any guests or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source of land education. All of our shows after broadcast will be downloaded on the master website, which is www.letstalkland.net, letstalkland.net, also on Podbeam, Spotify. You can email me at lou@mylandpro.com, and my cell number is 336-669-1405. Writing, how do they get us?
Well, they can go to our website, Lou, go to WKT1090.com, and also they can download the Simple Radio app and hear us anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world, Simple
That's
Radio
right.
app. Yep. And we're beach music and oldies, and we only play happy music, right?
That's right, yeah.
Happy,
no
happy
sad
music.
People around here. Happy, happy, happy.
And we've been 5 times nominated.
That's right, Station of the Year there on the East Coast.
And you got a nice award not too long ago.
Yes, I got the Reader's Choice Award for Announcer of the Year 2019.
Congratulations. Well done, buddy.
Well, thank you, Lou.
We'll see you next week. Teresa, you want to real quick give me your name
yeah.
and number?
My name's Teresa Martin. My number's 336-209-2937, and my email is teresa.mylandpro@gmail.com.
All right, Dr. Barbie's next. Stay tuned.